Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Nature's Mic podcast. In today's episode, we'll be exploring Zion National Park with our guest, Bryson Lever. Bryson began to take an interest in the national parks while in college and has gradually been checking parks off his list. Hello, Bryson. How are you doing?
I'm good, Evan. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. So, Zion National Park, you know, it's way out west, kind of. It's near a lot of other national parks, but pretty far away from where you're from and where I'm from, South Carolina. So how did you end up in Zion National Park? How did you get there initially?
So my now wife at the time, long-term girlfriend, had a friend who lived in Salt Lake City, and they had been wanting us to come out and visit them, and we used it as the perfect excuse to both visit them and check out several national parks while we're out in Utah. So we took a flight out there and arrived kind of like midweek of, you know, April of 2021. So COVID's going on. So it was kind of a unique national park experience for sure, because some of the national parks that we actually went to, we found we were some of the only people on some of the hikes we were doing, especially in Capitol Reef National Park, actually. Mm. It was quite funny. So unique travel experience to say the least, but yeah.
Yeah. So when you got to Zion, like, what did you guys do there? I know before we started this, you mentioned hiking. Did you guys do anything other than hiking, or was that all you really had time for?
Honestly, all we had time for was a hike, basically. But we did do the Angel's Landing hike, which is why it took so long. Obviously, quite strenuous, a little stressful if you don't like hikes. Elena had actually been before, and I was not aware of the scale of this hike. I had seen some pictures, but let's just say that pictures don't really do it justice.
Yes, I can agree with that very much. When I went there for the first time, I wasn't prepared for what it was. I don't know what I was expecting, but by the time I got through what I kind of call the first half of the hike, you kind of really have to make yourself go up that mountain, because it looks pretty intimidating.
When you went, did you end up going before or after the permit process? Because when we went, the permit process wasn't even a thing yet for that hike.
So I ended up, I actually remember when I was there, it was right around the time when like COVID was starting to become like a thing, like a global thing. Mm-hmm. It was like March of, what was that, 2020, I guess? So yeah. There definitely was not a ticketing system yet. And I remember like reading about that afterwards, and I was like, oh wow, I'm glad that we got that out of the way before we had to worry about that. Same. So you came in right before the ticketing system too. So that's good to know. So yeah.
Yeah. I could absolutely see the need for the ticketing system though, on that hike, because even though this was kind of like, I guess a little around peak COVID in early April of 2021, it was still jam-packed. Now, we did go on a Saturday, which I know is obviously a weekend, and everybody who was not at work, you know, around that area would probably come to the park to visit, but it was still very crowded, and there were several times where we would just be, you know, at long pauses hanging on to a chain on the hikes.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're kind of bumping shoulders with people, and I don't know, you kind of see the edge over there, and you're like, how am I going to fit two people in this narrow little corridor?
Yes, no, I mean, I can guarantee you, I don't think if I was with my parents, I would have looked at, you know, portions of the hike and just been, you know what, I'm turning around. This is not for me. I don't want to maybe get seriously injured today. And because I guess I'll describe it the best of my ability for people that may not have been there. So when you start at Angel's Landing, you know, you start at like the bottom and you kind of gradually like meander up the side of the canyon, and you kind of end up going, or side of the canyon walls, I should say, you kind of end up going a little bit kind of back into the sort of sheer canyon walls, and then you go back out. And then that's when I'm kind of describing this very fast, but that's when you get into what they call Walter's Wiggles, which was like the switchbacks. I'm sure you remember that. Yeah, that was, it felt like some sort of endless staircase scenario. And then you kind of get to essentially the most iconic part of the hike, which is you hike along the ridge, and it's kind of going up the, I guess, for lack of a better word, like the spine of the mountain or the canyon wall. And in a sense, there's a massive drop off on either side of you, and you're kind of just going straight up, and you're having to use these chains, like you said, and go around on the cliff. And it's very intimidating once you get to that point, because you can only either go forward or back, and it's very tight in some spots. But yes, it can be very intimidating, especially if that's not what you're used to. And I'm definitely not used to that with hiking. Most of the time when I hike, it's just in the forest or somewhere like that.
Yeah. It's funny because the Walters Wiggles mm-hmm. part is so well paved, you know, and it's easily accessible for anyone, and it's very wide, and it's, you know, it's like an asphalt top, if I recall, kind of like a concrete or asphalt surface that just goes several switchbacks all the way up to the top of the ridge where isn't there a bathroom up
yeah,
there, Evan?
Yeah, there is. It's a yeah. very, if you want to call it a bathroom, it's more of like a, yeah.
Yeah.
But it is there.
But it was almost like a staging area, you know, like just a, that would be like a hike in itself, you know, sometimes. And there was loads of people up there when we went, mm-hmm. and, you know, several people who didn't want to do the actual Angel's Landing portion of the hike, you know, were sitting there while other members of their family or party, you know, went right. onward. So it was definitely like a staging area right there at the top of the Walters Wiggles area.
I think what's most shocking is that it's been around for so long and not had some sort of ticketing system or way to just manage people that are on there. Because even when you start at the beginning of the trail, it warns how dangerous it is, and it tells you how many people have died on the trail. And I mean, it's just, you know, people, especially people doing Angel's Landing, they're not your, I would not call them your average hiker. They're not people that normally, like, just go to just do a really big hike. So, you know, they might not be as considerate with letting you go by, or they might kind of just be trying to push yeah. and shove, which causes for a lot of chaos on the trail, I think.
Yeah, when we were there, it was a very diverse group of people. You could see there was actually, so this is April, and it had actually snowed the day before we went in Salt Lake. So it's obviously still cold at like elevation that time of year. But there was everyone from like expert hikers to a local gentleman who had no shoes on his feet and said it gave him a better grip oh, on the wow. rocks. to a mother, you know, with a baby, like on a sort of backpack uh-huh. carrier sort of situation doing the hike. I mean, it was a interesting crowd, and it was just so, you know, busy. And I'm with you. I don't know how they have never had a permit system, and it definitely attracts all sorts of people. And it's very cool that so many people want to get out and do it. But yeah, you're right. It can be, you know, if you're not aware of it, don't know. I think when we went, 13 people had died at that time. So if you're not aware of how many people, you know, have perished and gotten seriously injured from that hike, you know, it's yeah. something. It's definitely
not something to take lightly or, you know, with a grain of salt by any means.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might have already answered this a little bit, but kind of if you could go into more detail about, you know, just so the large crowds, you know, there's a lot of parks out west that are crowded and they have a lot of people consistently, but Zion, it's not a canyon, but it's essentially these rock walls that raise up very sheerly mm-hmm. to impressive heights. So it's not the most expansive park around. So even though there's as much people or maybe even less people than some other parks, you're kind of all more scrunched together, and it's more, you know, closer knit. So if you could maybe go into detail of how you think that those large crowds kind of changes the experience of the park that you have compared to if maybe they weren't there.
Yeah, the entry and exit is probably, I'd say, like the most strict of any national park I've been to. I think I said there was a ticketing process in our conversation earlier, but I'm not, you know, 100% sure, but I do think that Elena had to buy tickets for the four of us. And then on top of that, we had to get like special wristbands for the bus, mm-hmm. I believe. And our bus was like always packed, you know? And at that time, I'm not sure because of what restrictions, the main road through the park was closed. I know they open it sometimes and have it closed sometimes. With that being a Saturday, I guess they closed the main road. So it was only, you know, access to certain areas via shuttle. So if you missed your shuttle, you were in trouble, you know, and every shuttle we went on was packed. Even our one that we went out of, like when we got done with our hike, the sun was starting to like, you know, drop at the top of the canyon, and there were still people that were starting the Angel's Landing hike, you know, at 4 or 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Still plenty of people.
Yeah,
going.
I know. And that's what's interesting. I'm trying to remember when I went, I believe I could be wrong, but I think the main road was open, but I remember we basically determined it's going to be easier to just use the shuttle because you can't really, there's not a lot of parking places within the park. It's all very,
yeah,
they're kind of trying to keep you moving so that you don't really like disturb a lot of places and that there's not people just kind of loitering and meandering about. So I'm pretty sure we ended up we would just park at the outside of the park near the visitor center and then just take the shuttle in because that was a more effective way to get around. And it did restrict you with time, but you know, you win some, you lose some, I guess. So, you know, the park itself, when you go in, like I've said, it's being surrounded by these massive walls, and you're kind of always just kind of looking up. But then with Angel's Landing, that gets you, it doesn't get you to the top of those walls. It gets you about halfway up, I'd say, maybe a little more. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of, you're standing on this outcropping and you're looking around at the canyon. Like, so how do you think doing Angel's Landing and doing that popular of a hike and it's kind of so high up, how do you think that changed how you looked at the park or how you perceived the park?
I think, you know, the perception of the park for me coming in was, it's kind of like a canyon and it doesn't look that big and you just can't get scale of the park through pictures mm-hmm. at all. So when we drove in on those, you know, the shuttle and I'm looking up at the wall, you literally have to bend your neck physically at, you know, when you're looking out the window to look up at the wall, it's so like grand. I had never seen anything like it, of course, because we live in South Carolina. Like the most mountains we have are the Blue Ridge and they're nothing. And you've never seen a straight vertical wall, right. You know? And then when you go on that hike and you're sitting there, like you said, about halfway to probably three quarters at the most up and looking out over everything, it's remarkable that you're just hovering basically on this one little rock outcropping in the middle of this canyon, mm-hmm. you know, surrounded by sheer cliffs on three sides of you. You know, it's something. And the sun was at a really cool angle the time of the year we were there, and just not a cloud in the sky. I mean, it couldn't have been a better day, but there is some wind up there, that was for sure. There's absolutely some wind, and it can get a little chilly.
Yes. Yeah, I remember thinking, getting to the top, you know, it's like, wow, I sweated, this is so nice, I'll get breeze. And then after about like 10 minutes, you're like, you know, I'm actually kind of cold. This is weird.
And, yeah.
But no, that's very interesting. And I remember when I went into the park, I believe it was when we just took, you know, the first shuttle and we were just going into the park. And like you said, you're having to crane your neck to look up at the walls. I remember that the bus driver pointed out these rock climbers. They were, that's the correct term. So you basically just look up at this canyon wall and there's this like these green and red dots of these people that have these harnesses way up on this sheer canyon wall, like miles above your head. And it really, like, the fact that they're two people, but they look that small against such a expansive piece of rock, it just kind of blows your mind. And you're just like, wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You know, they're just a speck in the grand scheme of that wall.
Right, right. It really puts things into perspective, even just seeing something as simple as that.
Yeah. And like actually being on the trail. So any of your listeners, if you were considering doing this hike, please dress accordingly, because when I went and did this hike, I was in like some long pants and a like long sleeve Columbia t-shirt. So that was fine, but I wore like kind of like casual boots. I wouldn't even call them hiking boots. And my goodness, you want some good hiking boots for this hike because these rocks are, they're not slippery, but they have sand on them. So you're not going to get like the best traction with something with like a flat sole. You need something with some grip, like some good quality hiking shoes or boots. That's absolutely a must. And as soon as I was sitting there, and like we had barely even, you know, started the actual strenuous part of the hike, and I was like sideways, just sliding a little bit. And I was like, yeah, I could have got some better shoes for this.
Yeah, I 100%. I agree with what you said. Like, I don't think I had really a problem with my shoes, but I remember not long after starting the hike, about maybe 30 to 40 minutes in, I think I had started with maybe I'd like layered up a little bit. Like, I had like a hoodie on and like some long pants, and I was just taking like most of that off. Like, I was in short sleeves and like long pants by the time I got to the top, because that's what's really weird is you start at the bottom of the canyon and it's very hot and humid, and even just going just halfway up, it's like there's a different weather system up there almost. And I'm sure at the top it's very different, but I've never actually been that high yet. So,
Yeah, it's one of those parks too where it feels like there's so much to do, and like Elena and I absolutely want to go back because we were only there for one day since we were kind of trying to see a bunch at once. And we didn't get to do the narrows, but after our hike, Springdale, the little town outside of Zion, has so much to offer. You know, it's absolutely one of those national park towns like Gatlinburg or Pigeon Forge, where there's, you know, accommodations and restaurants and stuff. We were There's a brewery right outside, and we were having a beer there. And like all the people who were like returning their waiters from the Narrows hike, I was so jealous because I wanted to do that one as well and didn't get to do it, you know, only there one day. But I feel like between the Narrows and Angel's Landing, if you're going to Zion, you absolutely have to at least do one of those two.
yes, I think those are the two most. I don't know this for a fact. Well, I know that Angel's Landing is probably without a doubt the most popular attraction at the park, but besides that, it then it's the Narrows, because I the Narrows you can definitely do in a day, and same thing with Angel's Landing, and they're both like really unique and really different. And I guess I'll go into my experience with the Narrows, since I did technically do some of it. I did not do the entire route that we planned to do, but it was very unique. But yeah, so we did the Narrows, and we had to get reservations ahead of time, like the day the wait like very early the day before, I remember that. And then at like 6 in the morning, you had to go to the outfitters, and they told you all the information, all the safety tips, and the regulations and such. And then we put on like our suits, which I had never seen suits like that before. It was like these sort of, they have gaskets on them so that if you fall in the water, they just
Oh,
kind of, they
wow.
self-inflate. It's like if you're wearing a life jacket that just kind of deflates and inflates if it gets in water. It's goofy, because when, man, you sweat so much in them,
Oh, I bet. Yeah,
especially
I
in the
bet.
sun. Yeah, and then you get those suits on. We took the bus. The bus took us all the way back in to where the Narrows are. They're kind of like in the back of the park, and then you just start, like, it doesn't even really start out as a trail. You're just walking up the river. Like, you're walking against the river. The river's flowing through the canyon, and it's shallow enough for you to walk there, and you just kind of occasionally you'll go onto like shoals, or like, there's ground that you can walk on. You're not constantly walking in water, but there's definitely portions of the hike where you have to just trudge through water and kind of make sure you have good footing. I mean, if you slip and you don't have good grip, maybe you'll float back and lose some progress, but it's pretty doable. And they give you very good, like, what I would call waiting sticks. It's just a big stick that you can use as leverage and all that. But and we were trying to get to, I'm slightly blanking on the name. I think it's like a junction in the canyon. I think they called it Wall Street. And then you can go like two ways, and one way goes further back into the canyon, like way out in the middle of nowhere, and then the other way goes to this waterfall that there was a name for. I'm blanking on the name, but our goal was to at least get to Wall Street and then maybe get to the waterfall after that, because that would have obviously been a highlight. But I'm trying to remember what time we started. I do not remember what time we started, but what we did not realize was that day was when it switched back over to daylight savings. So it got dark earlier, and we did not take that into account. So we hiked for a good while. I'm going to say definitely over an hour, probably like an hour 40, something like that. And we ended up never making it to Wall Street. What was terrible was we would get there, and I don't want to talk too much because we are interviewing you, but I'll just say this. We would keep getting around a bend, and someone would be like, "Hey, how far are we from Wall Street?" And they'd be like, "Oh, it's just around the corner." And we'd be like, "Okay, cool." And we never made it because we had to go back in time because the sun was going down. It was getting colder in the canyon. It was going to get really dark, and we were going to miss the shuttle. So my dad always says that it's one of his biggest failures of a father. So hopefully we can get back one day to fully complete the Narrows, God willing.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I feel like that's everyone on any hike you do, though. They're trying to be encouraging, but sometimes it's more like, no, how far am I actually from this point?
I think it's a very, if you hike enough, you're familiar with that because it feels so close, but so far, you know, it's just.
Yeah, absolutely. That happens. That's one of the funny things about Angel's Landing, though, is you can physically like see it the whole time due to the nature of this tiny little archway you're essentially walking on. And I mean, the fact that it changes elevations multiple times too, you'll get over one little hump and like start to come down and be like, oh no, there's a much larger hump that I have to like walk up. And that's going to take a significant amount of time.
So that's a great way to put it. I remember getting to one like spot in the trail, and you can very clearly just see like kind of where the top is. And then if you look closely, you're like, oh, wow, that's like a person walking up that. And they're like a tiny dot, like far away. Like, it's similar to the thing about the rock climber and how it gives you perspective. You're just like, all right, I am not that close. There's a lot more to go.
What's cool, though, with that hike is, you know, for anybody who's interested in doing it, the payoff is awesome. Like, yes, it's a little stressful. You know, you do have to hold on to the chain link rope, essentially, that they have there. And I'll say this, during my time there, the posts for the chain link were not always perfectly intact. Oh, so, like, they would be wiggling a good bit. So the chain link could have been a little tighter, probably. I'm sure they have since fixed those ones that, like, busted loose somehow. But, I mean, you do it. And there are definitely times where you're going straight vertical almost, and you have to like crawl on your hands and knees upward or downward or slide on your butt, because it is that steep at times. And there are times also where you're probably, what, Evan, 6 feet away from the edge?
I would say, I mean, I can remember one specific portion. It wasn't very long, but it was where there were chains in the wall, in the rock, and you had to hold on to the chains, and I mean, it wasn't even like a foot. It was just like if you stepped over there and you didn't have anything to hold on to, you'd start sliding, and that's not good. But it varies really. But there's definitely some portions.
It definitely does. And like getting back to what I was saying about the payoff, though, like you get through all of that, and you end up on this massive rock outcropping, actually. So I mean, I would say that there was at least way more than 50 people, it felt like. I'd say somewhere between 50 and 100 people on this outcropping, just all hanging out and just taking in the scenery. We had actually packed sandwiches, and when we like got to that point, we just stopped and had lunch up there. So that was really cool to sit and have some lunch and just take in the scenery and the breeze and everything.
Right. I totally agree. And one thing that's kind of surprising when you get to the top is that it's much more kind of like flat and broad than you would suspect. Like from like looking at it from below, it just looks like it's going to be this very skinny ridgeline. There's maybe not going to be a lot of room, and maybe you're just going to get to this one kind of drop off and that's all you can see. But I mean, you know, there's, like you said, there's 50 to 100 people up there and everybody's spread out. You're not really, you're not crowded. You're not like, you know, fighting over a place to sit or anything like that. But so yeah, it's very surprising how much it is very spread out at the top, and then the view is just incredible. I mean, it really. I remember for a while the view. There was a picture of me standing in front of the view, and that was the picture on my Instagram profile. And if I look at that picture now, it looks like a green screen or like a postcard. Like it doesn't look real. It's insane.
Yeah, it's really cool because you can see, like, you have two giant walls on either side of you, and you can see the river and roadway below. And the valley, you know, during the time of year that I went there, it was spring, so everything was starting to green up a little bit. And it was pretty cool, the color contrast between the giant walls and the valley below and the water and everything. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah, no, it's very, and I was at the park around the same time of year as you, you know, it was very green, but still a beautiful view by many regards. This is a little bit of like a random question. So, you know, in the park, I can probably guess the answer to this question, but I wrote it down here, so I feel like I should ask it. Did you see any wildlife while you were at the park?
Of course. Like, I feel like the deer in national parks are almost like dogs, because they are not afraid of people at all. We saw several deer, not on the trail, maybe when the trail started right by around the river, like it's right by the parking lot. The deer were just hanging out there. I mean, they're unfazed at all by people, and they just herd up and kind of walk around and amongst people. And most people I saw were being pretty respectful and just taking pictures from afar. Nobody was, you know, close and in the way of the wildlife.
Which is good, because I can't say the same for some of the other parks that I've been to. But yeah.
Oh, really?
No. Yellowstone. I think Yellowstone is infamous, you know, because people see bison and bison do not care how, like, they care how close people are, but they just, it's any space that they walk through is their personal space. So there's so many people that just think that, I think if I pet that bison, that'd be okay, but that's not a good idea. Not only is it terribly disrespectful, but that bison will show you that he does not want to be petted.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the karma, or not the karma, the irony of seeing this man get a picture with a bison. He was definitely standing a little too close, but he also had his arm in a cast. And I was like, well, you know, if you want another cast, I think that bison might be able to help you out with that. But,
Well, at least you didn't get a Darwin Award.
No, fortunately not. Yeah, so no, that's cool. Deer, I'm trying to remember if I saw any deer. I think I did, but yeah, it's interesting, especially with Zion. I guess because there's just so many people there all the time, and it's very kind of compact. They probably just become accustomed to having people there constantly. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah. I feel like it's one of those places where, Zion speaking, if you go there, there's something there for everybody. Whether you like, you know, nature, you'll see plenty of animals, insane views. If you like geology, my goodness, does that park have loads of geology. I mean, if you're interested into, like, if you like water, you obviously have the Narrows you can go to. I mean, that park is just filled with so much stuff, and that's like something for everyone, basically. Like, there's no way that somebody can go there and not have a good time and not see something they found like insanely cool. You know, there's something to nerd out about in that park, whatever your interests are.
100% agree with that. Yeah, there's a lot of different things to satisfy people, and maybe that's a testament to why it's always so crowded.
Yeah, definitely. I'm kind of like an earth nerd, so I majored in college in geography, but I also took a ton of geology courses because I was interested in it. And I remember going out there, I didn't quite understand the Grand Staircase until I went. And I think I might botch this, so correct me if I'm wrong, but the bottom of Bryce Canyon National Park is actually the top layer of rock at Zion National Park. And the very bottom layer at Zion National Park is actually the very top layer at the Grand Canyon, which is just incredibly cool. Like,
wow.
Yeah, that like just gradual step down, but it's gradual, quote unquote. But I mean, it's so dramatic in person, you know, like to think about, wow, like how many different periods of time we can track in these rock canyons, you know, it's really cool.
Yeah, no, definitely. Just those, like, especially how tall Zion is, as we've been discussing, it just shows you that, like you know that it's very old and ancient when going in there, because like just going out of Zion, the land is almost like completely flat, and then all of a sudden it just shoots straight up. I can't remember. I remember on the tour they told us that the Native Americans that live there, they had their own like word for Zion. I can't remember the the name, and I would not dare try to butcher it, but whatever it was, I remember that its English translation was it meant straight up land. So it, you know, even they were shocked at how just out in the middle of the desert where there's the occasional mountain or something like that, there's just this massive upshoot of canyons and canyon walls, and it's very impressive. But I didn't know that about the canyon layers that you mentioned between Grand Canyon and Bryce Canyon. I could definitely see that making sense too, because it's not really until you get there that you realize how close Bryce Canyon and Zion are to each other in a way.
Yeah, that's one thing that I can, you know, point out to everyone. We actually, because we were out there visiting friends, we didn't really have a plan, and this probably wouldn't have worked out if it wasn't, you know, COVID and nobody was traveling quite as much. We didn't really have a plan when we went to Zion. So that evening we ate dinner and ended up, they opened the park gates back up, and we actually drove back through the park and went up and around, and you go through this tunnel and it brings you out to like the very top of what was Zion. And then from there, it's only like a short drive. I want to say it was a couple hours, maybe an hour and a half to Bryce Canyon National Park. And they luckily had like vacancy that night in the national park. So we got to stay in Bryce Canyon National Park that night, and, you know, 2 hour drive, and it was pretty cool because we got to wake up that morning and actually watch the sunrise in Bryce Canyon. So that was super cool. We actually have an awesome picture, speaking of wildlife, in our house of some deer that were peeking their head up over like the canyon rim as the sun was coming up. It's a really cool photo. I'll have to show it to you sometime.
Yeah, definitely. That sounds amazing. Oh man.
Yeah, it's very cool how all of those parks are like so close to one another, and you can park hop if you're just trying to check a bunch off. But like I said, I mean, Zion's one that you should probably spend 2-ish days in.
Yeah, I know. I 100% agree, because, I mean, even in my time in Zion, I did not end up getting to go to Bryce Canyon just because I think Zion was our focus on that trip. And I think that probably worked out for the better, because we did get to do at least part of the Narrows. But I would definitely love to get to Bryce Canyon and kind of see that. But yeah, that's interesting. So, you know, we've talked a lot about kind of how the park looks and the crowds, but maybe just to, you know, get your personal opinion on this, you know, so there's a lot of, as I've said before, there's a lot of parks out west that are crowded and have a lot of people, but this park there's not many parks that, even if they're this crowded, they have a shuttle system to kind of work with that, and they have a ticketing system to make sure that they can limit the amount of people. So why do you think that Zion is crowded, if not maybe a little more crowded, compared to some of the other parks that are out west in the United States?
Probably a combination of word of mouth, honestly. I mean, everybody sees it. Some people see the pictures. And then also, I think accessibility plays a big role into it. Like, I'm pretty sure it's Zion and Grand Canyon are pretty close to Vegas, like not that bad of a drive. Am I correct there?
I'm not sure about the, you know, geographical layout, but
I think it is only like a 3.5 4 hour drive from Vegas. So that's a large airport. And I know it was about 4 hours from Salt Lake. Might have even been 3.5, but it's pretty accessible. We went to Capitol Reef, which isn't quite like as big as, you know, a Zion or a Grand Canyon or even a Bryce Canyon. It's one of the lesser visited ones in Utah. But it's kind of out there, and you have to take some back roads to get to it. But when we came in on Zion, I forget the name of or which interstate it was, but it's pretty much right off the interstate. You get off the interstate and take a highway in for maybe 30-ish minutes, maybe at the most. And it's right there. So I feel like that definitely brings a lot more locals from Arizona and Utah and even probably Nevada into the area that maybe, you know, wouldn't normally show up. They wouldn't, or yeah, people would just, you know, they live close by. So why not go to Zion, you know?
Right, right. No, and I actually just looked it up while you were talking, and it's right under 2.5 hours between Vegas and Zion. So that's really not that bad, especially, I mean, you could just fly in one day and, you know, make the trip out to Zion, stay there, and then do Zion in like a day or two and go back. But
exactly, because some of those ones in California, I feel like, I mean, those are awesome and they're absolutely on my list, but they're a little bit harder to get to, you know, because you have to do a good bit of driving from whatever airport you fly into to get to them. But, you know, that's a little different than like a Zion, where it's really not that bad. You have multiple different hubs that you could stay in.
Right, right. And that's what's interesting about Zion too, is that right at the entrance or kind of base of the park, there's I believe it's St. George, Utah. That's like the town around there. So there's a lot of places to stay, and you don't have to go far to have things to do, just like you mentioned about the brewery. And I remember the morning that we got up, we ate breakfast at like this Mexican breakfast place. It was really good. And Grand Canyon has something similar to that too. There's like a little village that sits out, but when they put those kind of villages or towns there, I think it really helps with tourism, because then tourists can come not just to do the park, but to see the town, and they can buy little knickknacks and souvenirs and get good food. And that's probably a really good draw in, especially for national parks. And I very much concur with what you said about some of the parks in like California or something being far away from the cities, because I know that I've been like, oh, we're going in this place, maybe I should look up how far away this national park is, and turns out it's like a 6 hour drive from wherever we are or from where we're flying into. So it's like, well, that's out of the question. I can't do that. But yeah, that's interesting to note.
In my experience with national parks, honestly, all of them outside of Congaree had some sort of tourist attraction centering around them. I've been to 5 now, but all of them had like either, you know, these little tourist towns that were basically set up for people visiting the national park, you know, with all sorts of attractions and whatnot that cater to different people, you know, whether you're families or people like me who are younger, stuff to do, you know, they definitely do a good job of catering to whatever needs you may have when you visit the parks.
So you may have already mentioned this a little bit before, but just to kind of narrow it down. So we've talked a lot about like the people in the parks and just kind of the sheer size of Zion itself. So if you were to try to convince someone to go to Zion in over other parks, if they only had a day and you're like, no, you should go to Zion, what would be what would be like the main reason that you would tell them to go to Zion? Is it because of the, you know, the magnificence, I guess I'll say, of the canyon walls or something of Angel's Landing of the like?
I would definitely say, like you said, the scale definitely plays a role in it. But I think I said earlier, you know, just there's something there probably for everyone. Whether, you know, you're an adrenaline seeker and you want to go see Angel's Landing, or you like water and you want to just, you know, go do a slow hike through, oh goodness, I'm blanking, the Narrows. Mm-hmm. There's something there for everyone. And, you know, lots of those national parks in Utah have a lot of history to them as well. So if you're somebody who's interested in history, I know that I'm not, you know, positive on Zion's, but some of the ones we went to had petroglyphs and stuff like that, or there was Mormon settlements there that you could read about. I mean, my goodness, I just feel like, especially at Zion, there's something there for everyone. I mean, obviously, like you said, wildlife. If I was to narrow all that down, though, I would probably say like scale and thrill seeking, because I have never been more nervous in my life probably than doing the Angel's Landing hike.
Mm-hmm.
Like genuine, like not quite shaking, but like, what am I doing? Like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever done.
Right.
When I started, and I'll go off on a little story here.
Okay.
Elena had told me that she had done it before and it was like really cool and we have to do it. And she loved it. And I was like, okay. So there was four of us, and me and her friend Bailey were just kind of like, okay, well, we don't know how we feel about this once we saw it, but we're going to do it. And Bailey's husband was just like, all right, let's do this. And so Bailey's husband and Elena were just going in the front, like full speed ahead. Meanwhile, me and Bailey were just sitting in the back, like, why are we doing this? This is crazy. But I'll say this, once you get through it, and you get to the very like edge, it's worth it. And then on the way back down, I feel like you have a different perspective of like looking at everything, and you don't like, it doesn't look quite as scary as it does on the way up. I don't know why, I guess because you're sitting up higher there, but you kind of look down and you're like, oh, okay, that ledge over there actually wasn't as bad as I thought it was, you know. But there are certain ones that they absolutely were as bad as you thought they were, but most of them aren't quite as bad as you think. Like there's a little bit more room than you thought was there initially. So if you're gonna do it, just don't get too in your head and just kind of have some fun with it and be lighthearted about it, because it's not quite as bad as you think it is on the way up.
Wonderful. Yeah, no, I that's a great point that you made, especially that just going down changes your perspective. And I think part of the reason that you're so nervous going up is because you know that it's high up, you know there's a good view, but other than that, you know that there's 13 people that have died and that it's very dangerous. So it's kind of just the worry of the unknown, like, you know,
yeah,
so dangerous. Like, what's the reason? And then you get there and you're like, oh, I see now.
Yeah. The whole way up, you're like, what does the next, like, turn, like, it makes you, I don't know if you've heard of like grounding, but it's like you have to pay so much attention to like the actual ground you're walking on and where you're holding your hands. It focuses you to be right there in that moment the entire time. Your mind can't be elsewhere. You are like, you are there and you are locked in on the way up. There is no like, okay, well, you know, what am I going to do when I get done with this? There's none of that. You are right. You're there right then and there. And you got to focus. If you don't focus, you could easily slip and hurt yourself pretty bad.
Right, right. And it's interesting too, because I think the fear that comes with that, but then the fact that you do it and you accomplished it and you live to tell it, it makes it all the more special and kind of like a core memory. You're like, yeah, I've done that. Like I conquered my fear in a way.
Yeah. And I'm not even afraid of heights, but man, when you get up there and you realize I'm one mistake. If I make one bad mistake, I could, you know, trip over my own feet, you know, trip over my shoelaces. You could hurt yourself or lose your life. I mean, it'll definitely give you some perspective going up that hill for sure.
Right. So kind of to end it off here. So you said that you 100% wanted to go back to Zion. What is the reason for that? Do you think you just missed the arrows and you want to go back and do that, or is there something else in particular?
Definitely. I just missed the arrows, and I feel like that's a whole nother adventure that I didn't get to do. And I, you know, would I do Angels Landing again? Maybe, but it's kind of one of those things. I'm like, I did it one time and I'm proud of myself for doing it, but do I really need to do it again? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, especially with the ticketing system now. I mean, it'd be more of a pain to do it. Yeah.
If you could easily go do it again, like without the ticketing system, then I would probably do it. But I totally understand the need for the ticketing system, because when we were up there, it was just kind of chaotic, honestly. And you would have to wait and let people pass. And some, like, there were people who were advanced hikers up there who were just passing you and not being very considerate of people who were taking more time. That was definitely something I experienced while I was up there. I bet that's probably not nearly as bad now with the ticketing system, but at that time, it was really annoying having these people literally run by you almost while you're like, I'm holding onto this chain, dude, and I'm not going any faster.
Right, right. No, yeah, I definitely agree. There's some very, it's interesting. I don't know if those people just don't process fear, or if they don't care, but I'm not sure. Anyway, well, let me see. So, yep, so you said the Narrows, and, you know, maybe if you actually end up getting to go to the Narrows and you get to Wall Street, let me know, because even I didn't make it that far. So
I will. I'll let you know what it was like. I'll have to tell you which way I go.
All right. All right. Well, thank you very much, Bryson. I appreciate you coming in. It's been a great conversation. I loved hearing about your experience with the park, especially how you love the geological aspect of it, and just how incredible of a park it is with its magnitude, and it's like just sheer, it's so hard to find a word to describe it, but just how really big the canyon itself is, and how impressive it is, really.
Yeah, it was a joy to be on here, and I hope, you know, to anybody who's listening, please go check out parks. I mean, if you're ever traveling in an area and, you know, you're close by a national park, Just go. Find a way and go, because there's so many awesome things out there to see. I mean, if I wouldn't have taken a national parks class in college, I would be totally ignorant. But luckily, I had a cool professor who got to show me all this stuff. And now I know that, like, each one of these parks has something that you're never going to see anywhere else, like, in the world. Each one of them is so unique, and you will absolutely discover something that you love at each and every one of them. So I really recommend anyone, if they're close to one, just go check it out. There's something there for you to see.
100%. I think it's the national parks. They have a tagline that says "Find your park," and I think it's used in reference to like an app or something like that. But mm-hmm. You know, to find your park, you kind of just have to get out there and start exploring. And
that's right.
I think it's great that how you mentioned that Zion really has a thing for everybody. I think that's part of what makes so many people want to come there. And yeah, I would definitely recommend, like you said, the closest national park you can get to. If it is Zion or any other place, just go for it, because I don't think you'll regret it. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Bryson, I appreciate you coming in. I hope you make it to the Narrows one day and make it to Wall Street. Good luck. Godspeed to you. And you have a great rest of your day.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Evan. You too.
All right. Thank you. I hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Nature's Mike podcast. Today we've done some great exploring of Zion National Park and some of the incredible things it has to offer. Join us next time as we explore another one of America's spectacular national parks.